Welcome back to the second hour of Up North News for a Thursday, where we're going to start with a curse word. Damn you, Luke Mathers. We were talking about the shipwreck sanctuary off Manitowoc and Two Rivers, and I made the mistake of telling him what always becomes an earworm for me when we talk about any of the Great Lakes. Joe Zepecki joins us as well. Joe, you feel my pain?
I don't think this is going to earworm me for the whole day, but that's only because I know when I'm getting in the car and we'll be able to pick something else to put on the radio.
See, and I'm a hostage here for 3 hours a day for whatever Luke wants to pull off the jukebox from hell, as it turns out to be. So Joe writes political analysis articles for us at upnorthnewswi.com. So we'll review some of what he's been talking about this week, some of the headlines as well. If you're watching on the video feed, you also know I'll have to go get my brewer hat because apparently I didn't get the memo that it was a fashion day. And you still have, like Luke, you still have optimism for the Brewers going forward, even though they lost the games to the Cubs and Pirates on that homestand?
I do. We're heading into Craigtober, as Suter called it the other day.
I'd never heard that before. Craigtober, whatever.
That call to the bullpen was one for the ages.
That's true. When he made the Raptor, held his arms up, Council did create an instant legend.
I can't believe the t-shirts aren't already for sale, but I'm sure they will be soon, and I'll be getting one.
Brent Suter made it his Twitter profile picture now. So Craig Council going also, like that is if you search Suter's Twitter account, that's what you see.
You see him making the with the Raptor arms there.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, Pat. We got what? We have like 11 days now until the Packers kick off. So we have to be all in for the Brewers for the next 10, 11 days. Mm-hmm. And take account there, and then figure out how we're going to reapportion our fandom for the fall.
I do feel good about the road trip, Colorado and Arizona, and that we come out of that. And if we can just get the Cardinals to stumble a little bit, I would like Pujols to get number 700, and then I'd like the team to just have the wind go out of all their sails. And that would be the ultimate win-win. So it's Labor Day weekend is upon us, and President Biden will be in Milwaukee for Labor Fest, either before or after Pittsburgh, where I guess it's tradition. He's always in Pittsburgh on Labor Day. So he's going to do both. I haven't seen a schedule. I don't know if it exists yet. But Joe, regardless, the fact that he's coming, he's going to be in two swing states, two of the swingiest of the swing states. It certainly tells you something that, Joe Biden can come here to a very competitive state with a very competitive Senate race and a very competitive race for governor, and have no hesitation whatsoever coming to Labor Fest in Milwaukee.
Yeah. I mean, listen, unsurprisingly, we're seeing the president's numbers rebound, after racking up all of these wins, from the bipartisan gun safety legislation to the CHIPS bill to the bipartisan, the strictly down by party lines, Inflation Reduction Act, right, that not a single Republican in Congress voted for. We're seeing the president's approval rating tick up. We're seeing movement among independents. New Wall Street Journal poll has shown that in March, independents were favoring Republicans by 12 points. Today, they favor Democrats by 3 points. That's an enormous swing. Mm-hmm. There's good things happening. And so it's great that they're going to fire up Air Force One, get that big bird in the air, and get Joe Biden out there. We're going to hear from him today with what sounds like a very important speech on the future of our democracy and the threat that these MAGA Republicans pose. So I think we said this 2 weeks ago when I was on, the political environment was better for Democrats at that point than it had been at any point this year. That's true again today. Things continue to go well. We saw, a pretty stunning upset in Alaska reported last night that Democrats actually picked up a seat in Congress. So there's a lot to be excited about if you're a Democrat right now.
The White House says that his theme is going to be about celebrating the dignity of the American worker. And what I'd say to that is, I think part of the reason. Now, I want to take nothing away from the Dobbs decision and that people are fired up over a right-wing Supreme Court that is trampling on the rights of women and others. That is, I still think that's number one on the list. But I think right up there is that American workers now feel like somebody is on their side, that it isn't just Wall Street running the White House. And that was not a guarantee. Republicans are running very hard to try to make the, you know, make working families feel some kind of pain, like, you know, Joe Biden has driven up the price of gas around the world. He's driven up prices around the world. But in fact, as you mentioned, with all these things that have passed through Congress, I think a lot of working families feel like they have an advocate again.
No question. And so what I would add to that is new polling from Gallup this week revealed that Americans approve more strongly of labor unions than at any point since 1965. What a great time to have a pro-union, pro-worker, pro-jobs president at the same time that labor unions are growing in strength. Lots of good things happening right now.
Not to mention a very pro-union advocate in Mandela Barnes running against Ron Johnson for Senate. More with Joe Sopecki coming up. You're up north. Welcome back to Up North News on this Thursday, first day of September. Luke redeeming himself with little Billy Joel there. Although, again, as I noted at the top of the show, the live version is the one that will you have to play at 11 to pick you up during the day. Joe Sopecki is with us. We're going to talk a bit about some developments in Wisconsin politics. We're eventually going to get into ranked choice voting in Alaska and what that could mean here. But let's turn to the governor's race for a moment and Tim Michaels, who is trying so hard to connect with the average Joe in Wisconsin. And I mean that sincerely. He is in no way trying to connect to the average Jane in Wisconsin. And he is doing such a good job. Please forgive the quasi-sexist term of pearl clutching. But when it was noted yesterday, not called out, not, it wasn't some kind of, you know, big conspiracy, when it was simply noted that Tim Michaels, through his family foundation, has given $250,000 in 2020, just 2020, $250,000 to anti-gay groups, anti-trans groups, anti-women's rights, health choices groups. He's telling us that he feels persecuted. He feels persecuted for his Christian faith and for giving to what he calls Christian causes. And whenever he says that, Luke, I think of that line from Princess Bride. From Inigo Montoya, where he says, you keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means. There are more than a few Christians, Joe, who are not happy about those kinds of donations and then trying to couch it as some kind of a, you know, persecution of religious faith. No, these are donations to groups that indicate what his checkbook values translate to the governor's race.
Yeah, listen, Republicans love to play the victim card. They're never happier than when they can claim that they're being persecuted. Here's the problem, and what I would just ask people to do is consider what Republicans would be saying if a Democratic candidate had been revealed to have given $250,000 to an organization that wants to defund the police. They would be up in absolute arms. Of course, that hasn't happened because what the Evers Barnes administration is doing is using the American Rescue Plan to fund police in all 72 counties across Wisconsin. Right. And so the other part that is really relevant here is when you talk about a Tim Michaels, someone who has not served a day in government in their life. He was a candidate 18 years ago, but he has never taken a vote in a legislative body. He has never taken an executive action as an executive, as a leader of a town or a village or a municipality. We know what this guy is saying. And it's pretty scary when he says that his position on abortion is an exact mirror of the 1849 law that does not provide any exceptions for rape or incest. And so we have to, as voters and as, you know, people are trying to understand who this guy is, what his values are, and what kind of governor he would be, we have to look at things like, where is he donating his money? And he is donating his considerable wealth to organizations that I think reveal a couple of things. The first of which is, he's not as Wisconsin as he wants people to believe. You don't split your donations between New York and Wisconsin if you're a through and through Wisconsinite. We knew about the homes, we knew about the houses, we know his kids went to school out there.
Private schools, right.
But he's also giving lots and lots of money to charities in New York because that's the other place that he lives. People can make their own decision. That's not a disqualifier, but it's a fact that people should know. And the other fact that people should know is that this is not like tithing your local parish. This is a gentleman seeking out, it would appear, organizations that, while there is a religious component when it comes to public policy, are way, way out on the fringes of American political thought, of American decency, of the civil rights issues of our time as they relate to our LGBTQ plus brothers and sisters. And people have a right to have that information and know that that is what Tim Michaels chooses to do with his riches before they go and see his name on a ballot.
It's so true. And again, it's not, it wasn't some kind of a hit piece as he's trying to make it out to be. It's, you wrote the checks and we're telling people what the checks are. If you didn't want them to be reported on, then don't make them. My own favorite is conservative pundit Jenna Ellis. And this was not related to this, but once tweeted, I'm going on the record now. If they try to cancel Christianity, if they try to force me to apologize or recant my faith, I will not bend. I will not waver. I will not break. One of the responses was, oh, knock it off. Biden is in church every Sunday. Trump has spent more time with Stormy Daniels than he has with a congregation. And it's true. The group of voters that somehow thinks that that Donald Trump is almost worthy of beatification continues to puzzle me. But I am here to tell you as well, it needs to be taken seriously. And I can sum it up in two words. Actually, I'm going to make it three words. Justice Brian Hagedorn, who people thought he was, you know, roadkill when it came out about his record of supporting, you know, anti-gay schools. So, Joe, we can talk about this. It can, you know, disappoint some people, but we know in Wisconsin it's going to motivate many others.
Yeah, and listen, like, this is, to be just really, really clear. As a progressive, we believe that people should be able to worship whomever they want, whatever they want, or nothing at all. This is not about Mr. Michaels and his wife's faith. It's not about their family's faith. No one, anyone who criticizes their faith, doesn't deserve the time of day in my book. What we have to do is understand what Mr. Michaels will do on public policy issues of our time. That includes, you know, trans issues, LGBTQ issues, a women's right to access reproductive health care. And what we are seeing is that this is not just Tim Michaels running to the right to win a primary and saying pretty extreme things that maybe he doesn't believe. These are deeply held beliefs because he has given his treasure to them for years, you know, in the past. And people just have a right to know that, and that's all there is to it.
We have noted some of the flip-flops from Tim Michaels in his campaign already, and I don't recall if we got to talk about one of the more recent ones that's not quite a flip-flop, but more of a big old loophole of somebody who said that he was not going to take money from special interest political action committees, but his running mate can, and Roger Roth does, and it benefits Michaels. So for somebody that was really trumpeting his ban on special interest PAC donations, I don't hear a lot of that trumpeting anymore.
Well, the one that strikes me as even more preposterous than that is Michael said he was going to fund his own campaign. He wasn't going to let anybody give him more than $500. And the very first thing his campaign did after he became the nominee was said, just kidding, we'll take $20,000 contributions. Mm-hmm. I don't understand the logic of spending millions of your own dollars to try and build a brand that says I can't be bought. And then on day one of your campaign of the general election, undo all of that and be like, just kidding. I don't get it. I don't think Mr. Michaels is running a particularly strong campaign. I don't think he's a particularly strong candidate. And part of it is he doesn't have an answer for these issues and these topics that are top of mind with Wisconsin voters that is anything other than wildly out of the mainstream. The last Marquette Law School poll showed 88% of Wisconsinites believe that there should be exemptions in terms of accessing reproductive health care for victims of rape or incest. Tim Michaels doesn't believe that. That's a pretty extreme position.
No, and instead, again, you're just going with certain buzzwords and phrases. I've noticed several posts lately talking about giving power back to the parents when it comes to education, which, you know, is what Glenn Youngkin did to win the gubernatorial election in Virginia, was this anti-public education plank where you don't say you're anti-public education. You talk about giving parents control. By contrast, a few days back, Governor Evers was using funds from the American Rescue Plan to make sure that public schools could address the teacher shortage. But those little buzzwords and catchphrases are, again, they're going to connect with some voters depending on how much messaging is out there to help voters decode it.
Yeah, I spent a little time writing about the Evers announcement this week because it's so important. You know, it's September 1st. It's back to school day across Wisconsin. Thank goodness. My favorite day of the year. The kids are back in school. And we know, we've seen the reporting, you know, that teacher shortages are real. There is burnout from pandemic. Teachers have been vilified as professionals for more than a decade here in Wisconsin and around the country. The environment is tough to hire and retain good teachers. So what Governor Evers did, with no help from the state legislature, who called it a year in February and haven't been back since, is he took $90 million in federal funds available through the American Rescue Plan to help districts incentivize new hires, you know, get more teachers into classrooms this fall. And this is really important. I think it's more than $75 million is for teacher hiring. But there's also about another $15 million for mental health services for kids. We know that after 2 years of a pandemic, there is something happening with our kids. The mental health challenges are as acute as ever, and making sure that kids have somebody they can talk to in the school buildings that they go to every day is really, really important. So good on Governor Evers for getting that done. And, you know, to go back to your point about Mr. Michaels, yeah, listen, say giving parents more choice sounds great until you pick it apart and realize that what that means is Tim Michaels and his allies in the education space want to take money out of public schools and set up an entirely separate statewide system of schools that are private schools now, right? It just, that is what that means. When he says give parents more choice, he's talking about taking money out of your kid's neighborhood school and putting it into a private school or a charter school. Most Wisconsinites don't want to see that.
Now, even though it exists right now, it's just that folks don't know it because Republicans have hidden that from the property tax. We're going to take a break in a minute here, so we'll do more about the U.S. Senate race coming up. But I think it's easy to give the very short version of why are we hearing about higher security costs for Mandela Barnes compared to past lieutenant governor candidates? Certainly a lot of eyebrows being raised about all those security costs. Joe, it doesn't raise my eyebrows, and it shouldn't take a rocket scientist, much less a political scientist, to figure out.
No, Republicans are out here criticizing Barnes for needing security when they are the ones creating the environment where threats of political violence are at an all-time high. That's absurd. And let me just tell you something. I remember when I was in my mid-30s, I didn't want security following me around. The notion that Barnes like enjoys this or wants this, or this is some perk to him, is just asinine. This guy wants to be living his life and serving the public. And instead, because of the threat environment created by MAGA Republicans and Donald Trump, he needs around-the-clock security. That's not the way it should be, but it's the world that Republicans have created.
Joe Zepecki is with us. Well, more after this break. You're up north.
Why am I persecuted here? Why?
You're listening to Up North News with Pat Kreitlow.
We're not going to spend a lot of time here with Joe Zepecki talking about elections in Alaska, though you did note a Democrat won that and is going to hold it for the first time in 50 years. And it was quite the experiment in ranked choice voting. So I would just ask between you and Luke and I, if we were having an election and with a ranked choice ballot and the options were zucchini, green peppers, and cauliflower, would you rank all three or would you just vote for one and leave the others off?
I think I would go... peppers one, zucchini two, cauliflower three.
Okay.
That's where I'd come down.
There you go. Luke?
Green pepper or just bell pepper in general? Like, do I get to cut?
Green peppers. Because I get such a gag reflex off of those. So yeah, green peppers.
I'd probably go zucchini, pepper, cauliflower.
Okay. I now, because I enjoy politics, I enjoy public service, so I never understand people who say I never vote. That ballot I would set on fire and then just walk out of the booth at that point. So we're talking about more traditional politics with Joe Zepecki now, and we were talking about Mandela Barnes running against Ron Johnson for U.S. Senate. And one of the headlines this week was about the fake electors that signed fraudulent papers asserting that Joe Biden Donald Trump had won Wisconsin when he did not. They met in the state capitol virtually at the same time as the duly elected electors, thanks to help from now Congressman Scott Fitzgerald. Turns out one of those fake electors is on Ron Johnson's payroll. I mean, Joe, you can't make this stuff up.
It's pretty astonishing, especially in light of what the January 6th committee revealed, which is that Senator Johnson is as tied up in this January 6th stuff as anyone, right? We know the January 6th committee has revealed that part of the plot to prevent the peaceful transition of power required Trump and his allies throwing the Electoral College into chaos. And they believe this is all wrapped up in what they were pressuring Mike Pence to do, that if they submitted fake competing electors, they could sow enough confusion that they would be able to maintain their grip on power. And so with 20 minutes to go before the official counting of the Electoral College votes on January 6th, 2021, where did the Trump legal team, the Trump team go to try and find an inside man who would hand fake elector certificates from Wisconsin and Michigan directly to the vice president on the floor of the United States Senate? They went to Ron Johnson. Thank goodness that Mike Pence and his staff shut that down. But the fact that Johnson was at the center of this, the fact that Johnson had multiple evolving, different answers to why he was so directly involved into what that was about and where the documents came from, the fact that there is what we call in the business bad tape of him running away from reporters to avoid trying to talk about this. This was already a nightmare scenario if you're Ron Johnson, because people are concerned about democracy and they have a lot of questions for him. The fact that he has paid a staffer more than $10,000 in the last 4 months, 5 months, who was one of these fake electors, is pretty shocking. And I think it's going to lead to a lot more questions that the senator doesn't have a good answer for.
Well, he doesn't. You talk about the bad tape episode, which is one of my favorite mini episodes of the entire year, where he says to a reporter, "I'm on the phone." And the reporter says, "No, you're not. I can see your screen."
Right.
He's not actually on a phone call. So they're trying to divert. And again, whatever can make Mandela Barnes look bad. And so I know it comes up. People say, well, what about all these ads? It says Mandela Barnes doesn't pay his taxes. That's, again, one of those things you say it often enough, there are people that are going to think it's true.
Yeah, Mandela Barnes has paid all the taxes he's owed. And listen, the way I like to think about this is, was Mandela late paying a property tax bill here or there? Yeah, he was. Like that's been reported, that's been out there for years. So in this election, I think what we should do is, let's just give all of the multi-millionaires to Senator Ron Johnson, right? All a couple of dozen of them in Wisconsin. And let's give all of the people who have forgotten to pay a bill at any time in their life, or maybe at the end of the month didn't have enough to meet all their bills, so they had to kick it to next month. I think you'll find that there are more people in Wisconsin who have missed paying a bill on time than there are multimillionaires who, you know, benefited from Ron Johnson's special tax break for his big special interest donors. Mandela's appeal is, I think, in large part, how well he's doing in the polls, is how relatable he is, how very Wisconsin his story is, and the perspective that he will bring to that body, which will both immediately pull down the average age, will immediately pull down the average net worth, and will offer a perspective that is very different than that of multi, many times over millionaire Ron Johnson. And so I don't think these attacks are working the way they want them to. I don't think they're going to stop, because they know they don't have anything to do to build Ron Johnson up. Their only hope is to try and tear Barnes down. But if this is the best they got, boy, okay.
Let's turn to state level politics for a second, the state legislature specifically. And we've noted already that Wisconsin Republicans adjourned the session in late February and put themselves on a 10-month paid vacation. A few days ago, just about a week ago, when it was announced that President Biden was going to forgive a certain amount of student loan debt, it was noted that Wisconsin is one of only 13 states that has not put their state tax code in sync with the federal tax code and waived income taxes on forgiven student loan debt. Wisconsin still treats forgiven debt as taxable income. Wisconsin was one of only 13 states. Now Wisconsin's one of only 5 states, because other states have quickly put themselves into action to change that. But Joe, I'm sure you saw, because it was on TMJ, I think, in your neck of the woods, State Representative Adam Nealon saying, "I'm a Republican, but this might be the first tax break that I oppose." I mean, talk about not relatable.
No, the Republican Party is so completely lost right now. It's like, it's, if it weren't so scary, it would be sad, because there is a long, proud tradition of a conservative party in this country and in this state. But what you see today bears no resemblance to that party that was worthy of respect and sort of co-partnership in leading, you know, our state and our country for generations. They've lost their minds. They've lost what were first principles for them, which was always cut taxes, right? It's just, you can't make it up. They're so mad at Joe Biden. They're so mad at Democrats for having the gall to make public policy choices that they're willing to, for the first time ever, oppose a tax cut that is just a no-brainer, which is why states around the country are fixing this glitch. You can think what you want. You can agree or disagree with the student loan forgiveness and the way that this, you know, came to pass. We can talk about that if you want. Like, you don't have to agree with that policy. But this notion that a forgiven debt is taxable income is baloney. I don't know what else. Like, it's just nuts.
What it is, again, it's more money lost to Wisconsin or Wisconsinites because of a temper tantrum. Mm-hmm. And we have a couple of huge examples of that in Medicaid expansion, which has cost Wisconsin over $1 billion, probably closer to $2 billion by the time this budget cycle is done, in federal funds that could have come here to help Wisconsinites, especially lower income ones, afford health insurance coverage, give them more security. And Republicans have said no, because it was in Obamacare and we don't like Obama. And then there was high-speed rail, the thing that we could be enjoying right now and as an economic benefit. But again, we don't like it, so we're going to turn it down. And Joe, I wish one of the things I'd done over the years was track all the other smaller but still noteworthy incidents where Republicans turned down or goofed up and didn't get federal money because of either a temper tantrum or or just incompetence, it seems. And I really wish I would have done a better job these past 10 years to show people just this happens more often than they think.
You might have needed a couple of notebooks.
We're talking to Joe Sopecki about the week in politics here. We spoke earlier with some folks from Data for Progress about climate and specifically the climate provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act and the very much the bipartisan support that comes with some of the provisions that are in it. Even amongst Republicans who say that climate is not a motivating factor for them, that it doesn't strike them as an important issue, and yet they support the provisions in there that are not just about climate but about economic development that would come to Wisconsin. Any surprise hearing that from you?
No, these numbers are really reassuring, and I think it's worth taking a couple of minutes to talk about how the Inflation Reduction Act will create good paying Wisconsin jobs, right? We know that in the next 10 years, there is going to be an absolute explosion of utility scale solar development. The numbers as reported by the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, based on a report from the Midwest Economic Policy Institute, are just astonishing in terms of the amount of development that is underway. One of the big questions at this time is still, who's going to do the work? We know that as Wisconsin transitions from sort of coal-fired plants to renewable energy, we know that it takes fewer workers to run, to operate renewable energy plants than it does the coal-based ones. So most of the economic impact comes from the construction of these solar fields and the wind turbines, if you're talking about wind energy. And so what the Inflation Reduction Act does is it provides really attractive tax credit incentives for developers to hire union workers, to pay a prevailing wage, to ensure that there are apprentices on these job sites. And if they do that, they get like up to a 30% tax credit on the cost of the entire program. And if they use products that are manufactured in America, they get an additional 10% tax credit on top of that. That means we're sort of incentivizing on top of incentivizing to make sure that it is blue collar American workers building these projects. And that's a win-win-win when it comes to, you know, we're moving towards cleaner energy, we're lowering our reliance on fossil fuels, and we're benefiting the local economy and working Wisconsin families. That's great public policy. I don't see how anybody could be against it. And based on these numbers from Data for Progress, it looks like almost nobody is.
And I noted as well with the folks from Data for Progress and Evergreen Action in our last hour that when asked, should Wisconsin do more to increase wind and solar power, again, you had two-thirds that said we should, including 44% of Republicans. And I ask it kind of in jest when I say, does this mean like Tom Tiffany will eventually not be in the pocket of big oil anymore? That's probably a bridge too far. But what I think is a serious and fair question is, will more Republican politicians start to treat clean energy as the economic development tool that it is, rather than reflexively be against it and scream Green New Deal socialism?
Well, they're going to have to, because the market is changing, right? The reason that all of this development, that the three major utilities in Wisconsin are already planning to do this, is that the market has gotten better. This is, you know, Republicans love to talk the mighty hand of the market. Here it is working in real time. And so what lawmakers have done in Washington, provided they have a D after their name, because they were the only ones to vote for the Inflation Reduction Act, is say, you know what, if the market is going to turbocharge this development of renewable energy, we're going to make sure that policymakers incentivize American workers doing the job. Here's how we're going to do it, and make sure that the market, you know, the private sector and the public sector are working together. That's how public policy is supposed to work. Good on Joe Biden, our pro-union, pro-labor, pro-jobs president, who's coming to Milwaukee on Labor Day to get this done.
More with Joe Sopecki when we come back. You're up north. let's talk for a minute, and just a hot minute or so, about former President Trump and how he handled top secret information. First thing I want to share before I get Joe Zepecki's view is a great tweet from Brian Tyler Cohen, and many others would have said, look at this photo of all these classified documents at Mar-a-Lago. And he says, imagine this was a photo of Obama's living room, and just try to imagine what would be happening on Fox News right now. And it's so true. Then there was a Trump attorney who said on Fox, quote, I'm somebody who has been in his office. I have firsthand knowledge. I've never seen that. That's not the way his office looks. He has guests frequently there. To which people responded, she just said he has guests frequently in the place where top secret documents were found. Joe, help me understand how anybody is still defending this.
This is really not going well for the former president, who, let's be really clear, deserves, you know, equal protection under the law and his day in court, just like anyone else who may have committed a crime in this country. The problem is the former president is sort of telling on himself. I don't know if you saw this, but in their, in that filing, that picture you're talking about, yesterday on Truth Social, the president clarified for his followers, that's not how those top secret compartmentalized information, special access program documents look. That's not where they were in my office. They were stored in cartons. They took them out of the box to make me look bad.
As soon as he said they're in cardboard boxes, they're not on the floor, they're in cardboard boxes. I love that somebody posted, you can already envision Trump's lawyers overdosing on Xanax and washing it down with a bottle of bourbon when they heard Trump admit that they're stored in boxes.
So this is not good. I think it is really telling that Republicans have really toned down their defense, because it increasingly looks like the former president's actions, Mr. Trump, they're just indefensible. He had hundreds and hundreds of documents that he had no business having, that he did not need. His lawyers claimed that an exhaustive search turned up like 75 or 100 of them, that they spent weeks looking for these. And in the couple of hours that the FBI were there, they found orders of magnitude more than it took these lawyers weeks to find, who had attested, you know, in a legal document that everything had been turned over. So there's clearly something going on here. Clearly, Republicans don't want to talk about Trump. They don't want to talk about this after, you know, in 2016, claiming that, you know, Hillary Clinton should be locked up for mishandling top secret information. And so, man, it's just like, if you had presented this as like the arc for a television series, they would have thrown you out of the writer's room and been like, no way, nobody's going to believe that the locker up guy turns around and mishandles classified information 7 years later.
Well, but if you're going to write it, you need certain side characters to really bring comedy relief. And that takes me to Sean Duffy, the former congressman from up north, who was interviewed by Fox News a couple of weeks ago. And said in so many words, well, you know, Trump's too dumb to know what's in these. He didn't pack the boxes. He doesn't know what's in there. But then he put this condition down of, you know, there might be one way that you could criminally investigate him. Luke, you still have what Sean Duffy said on Fox? Go for it.
Do you ever think that Donald Trump was packing boxes out of the White House to move them to Mar-a-Lago? Do you think that he went through the boxes in Mar-a-Lago? Do you think he knows what he had in those boxes? I don't think he did. And so to come after Donald Trump criminally, I think, is going to be very challenging for the Department of Justice, because I don't think he packed them. I don't think he knew what was in them. There was a negotiation about those boxes, but Donald Trump didn't look through them. Donald Trump didn't pack them. And so criminally, I don't think there's going to be any liability here, or very challenging for the Department of Justice, unless he had top secret information in his desk drawer at Mar-a-Lago and they found that. Unless he had top secret information in his desk drawer at Mar-a-Lago, in his desk drawer at Mar-a-Lago, in his desk drawer at Mar-a-Lago, and they found that, maybe, but more than likely, it's in boxes down in some locker room in Mar-a-Lago, and it'll go nowhere.
You can't again, you can't write, if you wrote that in a script, Joe, you know, it'd be a great side character, but you're right. They still might throw you out of the room.
Yeah. It's not like, it's not, nobody would buy it. It's like the Keystone Cops.
It's unbelievable. Let's get off of that and come back to something a little bit more serious at the state level. When the state Supreme Court, when the right-wing justices on it said you can't use Dropboxes anymore, it led to confusion about guidance on how you handle ballots, because the law as written was not anticipating Dropboxes being made illegal. And so if you read it to the letter of the law, it also meant that people with disabilities who require assistance in filling out and or delivering a ballot could no longer get that assistance. And so a federal judge yesterday stepped in and said, you can't do that. You know, the Constitution guarantees a right to vote. The Constitution takes precedence. And Joe, I think it's just testimony to this right-wing rush to obstruct voting rights and to alter, if not rig elections, that is being recognized for what it is. But again, I don't know how much more damage could be done that, you know, other judges have to come back in and fix.
Yeah, I mean, listen, there are people who are threats to democracy right now in America, which is really frightening. And there are things that those people are doing that are threats to democracy across the country and right here in Wisconsin. Thank goodness that the rule of law still does exist. And it will exist as long as we hold on to our democracy. But among the things that is so terrifying is these, you know, these MAGA politicians who, they want to limit access to the ballot box, and they don't think through what their actions and choices mean. Or maybe they do, which is even worse and more nefarious. But thank goodness, if you are a disabled voter in Wisconsin, you will be able to get some assistance. You know, we can't have these right-wing MAGA Republicans calling all the shots. The Defend Democracy Project is going to have a report out in the next couple of weeks about how acute the threat to democracy is right here in Wisconsin and what things are happening that people need to be aware of. Stay tuned for that. I'd love to come on and discuss it when it comes out. But at least for one day, for yesterday, there was a win for civil rights, a win for access to the ballot. And what I'm just going to encourage everybody who listens to this to do is go out and cast your ballot early, so that if there are any issues, if you encounter any difficulties, you have time to resolve them. The last thing you want to do is wait until 7:45 on election day to cast a provisional ballot and try to cure it before the votes are counted. There's too many, you know, folks who want to take away your right to vote. Go out and show them what you mean business by casting that ballot, and do it early.
Yeah, it's what they say. The only, you know, cure for what ills democracy is more democracy. Joe Specky, thank you. Let's do it in a couple of weeks again.
Talk soon.
All right. Have a great weekend. And we will be back with more after this. You're up north.